This episode of the Better Every Shift podcast is brought to you by Lexapol, the experts in policy, training, wellness support, and grants assistance for first responders and government leaders. To learn more, visit lexapol.com. That's L-E-X-I-P-O-L.com. Now let's get into the show.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Better Every Shift podcast. I'll be your host. I am Fire Lieutenant Aaron Zamzow. I'm also a writer for Fire Rescue One. And I'm, of course, not alone. I am with the commander, Janelle Fosquet. She's the editor in chief. She's been my mentor boss, makes me sound really well on this, keeps me in line. Janelle, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm a little starstruck, I'm not going to lie. So this is going to be a fun one.
We do. I'm also starstruck. This program's stepping up. We have with us country music sensation. I'm going to say it because I've listened to your music, and a fellow first responder. He's on the other side. He was a police officer, but he's wearing a fire shirt today. And we're really happy to have Frank Ray with us. Coming from Nashville, brother, thank you for being here, man. How are you doing? You got a busy week.
I do. And first off, let me just say hi, Janelle. Good to see you. He said his commander. You call her commander.
I just call her a commander because she keeps everything in line, man. Tries to.
And of course, LT, thanks for having me. This is awesome. Yeah, I'm in Nashville. This week is generally busy because we have a country radio seminar here, which is essentially everybody in country radio or digital streaming platform services. They come out to, you know, see what artists are up and coming and, you know, get wined and dined by all the record labels to go see their favorite artists, and who doesn't want to do that? You know what I mean? If you're in country radio, this is a good week because you're just like, hey, you want to go get drunk with Luke Bryan? Totally.
And before you got into country, and I'm sure you've been playing music all your life, but you were a police officer for 10 years. And thank you for doing that, by the way. Thank you for your service. It's great to kind of see you now with your reach in country music. You're giving back to the first responder community. You're a real advocate for mental health. So before we get into, you know, your background as a police officer, you know, how are things right now on the music side? You know, you have, we talked about this big week, but man, how are things? Like, where are you at? And are you got a new album? You just had one coming out. You're going to tour some touring. Give us an update.
Yeah, I think, creating music, especially in Nashville, it's such a, Alan Jackson said it best, and he's like, Lordy, don't the wheels turn slow. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's so many artists and so much new music that's coming out all the time that even just trying to get into the studio to create some new music is a win. And the fact that I've been able to block out some time to be able to do that, that's sort of what I've been focusing my efforts on since the beginning of the year, which I know we're not that far in, but yeah, so new music is coming. Excited to get back into the studio, get creative, and you know, on my social media, I've been kind of putting little snippets of songs and demos that I've been listening to back that I've written a long time ago and writing some new stuff. I'll put snippets of that. So if people are interested in, what the next album might sound like or what it might look like, go follow me on social media and all that. And, you'll see, but yeah, this is, this year has definitely been a start off with just creating and trying to get into that headspace of creating a new EP. And, you know, once I get that done, then I think we'll open up touring. There's a few things that are coming here that we were talking about it. You know, Oshkosh is coming up, big country music festival down there, the Crossroads 41. Of course, once springtime kicks, man, it's just festival season. It's absolutely insane. And we're on the road.
Yeah. Well, right now, all four of our listeners, I'm just kidding, but they're Googling you. They're listening. What's one of your favorite songs? Like, if you were to listen and tell someone, check me out. I know you don't like to talk about yourself, so I'm going to put you on the spot and say, what's one song you want, at least maybe even the first responder community to listen to?
It really just kind of depends on what mood you're in. I think if you want to kind of hear something different and something that really represents my heritage as Hispanic country artist, there's a song called Streetlights that's on there. That song, there's also another song called Wasting Your Words. And I highlight these songs because they're very Latin influenced, and that's always sort of been my goal, but that's definitely the direction that I want this next project to go. Because, you know, like I said, it's a very saturated kind of market, and it's so easy to write a song and sound like somebody else. Like, but you know, the Carrie Underwoods have their lane, the Chris Stapletons have their lane, this and that and the other. And so for me to really just kind of diversify myself a little bit and separate myself from the rest of the herd, I want to be able to lean into my heritage. And so I would say listen to Streetlights or listen to Wasting Your Words. Great Latin influence and definitely my contribution to country music.
Were you always musical back when you were in law enforcement? Were you like thinking about songs and you'd be out? Like, what was that like for you?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, this has been what I've wanted to do with my life since I was a kid. Since as long as I can remember, I've wanted to be a musician. So I've been singing, performing my whole life, but never really had an actual avenue to get there. And then I found myself in law enforcement, and you know, it didn't take long for my peers to find out that I could sing and for the chief of police to find out that I could sing. And so I was getting voluntold to do all the police officer memorials or different services and, you know, events that were going on, and, you know, do the anthem or write some original music and play for these events. And then, of course, as things evolved in my career, kind of went, you know, 5 years down the road, then 6 years down the road, and you start realizing that you need to find a hobby or a healthy outlet to really kind of deal with all the traumas and the stresses that first responders deal with. I found myself just kind of diving right back into music. And I said, I need to really have a hobby outside of work, because it was really just taking up all of my time. And so I struck up a little country band, and, you know, I was a cop by day. And then at night I'd go and play all the dives that, you know, I'd run into people that I'd arrested. So it was just one of those things. It was just one of those things that really just, and I knew that I was doing something good when they didn't want to kick my ass or get into a fight, and they instead send me a shot on stage and be like, all right, we're good. So that's when I kind of really started taking it seriously, like thinking about it seriously as a career path.
Yeah, well, and that's awesome. You talked about a mental health outlet, and that's one of the things, you know, when we were talking kind of behind the scenes, and when, you know, we reached out and started talking about having you on the show. And I think the mental health side of stuff, whether you're police officer, firefighter, EMT, paramedic, right? Like, I love the fact you said, hey, you need this outlet, because if you don't get that outlet, did you find that you were kind of going in a more negative path before you started really finding music? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is funny, because most times when I talk about that, everyone just kind of glances over that. You know what I mean? Just like, okay, so you did music to make you happy. Yeah, the alternative would be what would have happened. You know what I mean? I was definitely stressed out. I'd come home from work, and there'd be nights where, you know, I dealt, you know, with an infant fatality or something like that. You know what I mean? And or I had to do multiple death notifications, which is something that happened all the time. It just got to the point where I'd get home and I'd like bawl and break down to my wife. And shout out to all the spouses out there as well. We can talk more about that, but she definitely sympathized with what I was going through, or empathized with what I was going through. But she was just like, I don't know what else I can do other than support for you. But for stuff that you're experiencing, she's never really had to deal with any of that. And so there's only a limited amount of tools that she has to try to help me cope through the whole thing. And, you know, fortunately, again, I had music, but had I not had music or something else, a healthy outlet, yeah, who knows, man? You know, who knows how it would have turned out?
Yeah, you mentioned the spouse. I think those two things together, right? Because one encourages the positive outlet, you know? And but you also mentioned the thing too, and I don't think we give enough credit to our spouses and a significant other. So I'm glad you mentioned that. What's more difficult for your wife now, when you made the leap to country music? Now there's pressures there. There's tons of different pressures, obviously. But like, is it harder for her now, or was it harder for her back then?
Yeah, I mean, each one comes with its own set of obstacles, right? But she's definitely happier that I'm not wearing a uniform anymore. You know what I mean? Because you just never know if you're going to make it home after shift, you know, and we hope for the best. Or even if you do, if you bring all this baggage with you, you know, and so she's definitely happier that I'm not chasing bad guys anymore, but not as happy that I go and party with all these college folks at little dive bars and put on a show.
What was that transition like when you left the police department to go full time in music?
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, we were definitely afraid. At that time, we had my 7-year-old daughter, Mackenzie, who was only 3 months old at the time. And so I was actually trying to convince her to not let me leave my job. And she was like, no, this isn't your life's passion. This is what you want to do. And I think you need to do it, because I, for one, am not going to have you resent this family or resent me to make you feel like we ever held you back from your dreams. And I don't ever want you to look back on your career and say, well, that held me back from pursuing my dreams and this and that. So she was a big cheerleader. She was a big support system for me. And, you know, but it was daunting, because you have not only to have my wife, but now we have this, you know, 3-month-old baby, and I left the steady gig, and I was like, man, I got to figure out what to do here. But again, I think I was surrounded with the right team. My manager was very driven and ambitious. And so we just started gigging, and I was able to, you know, my wife was like, we need to make this much a month to survive. And I was like, okay, I think we could do that. And, you know, there's nothing that hard work and determination can't do. And so that's what we did. And 3 years later, I found myself with a record deal in Nashville. Here we are.
Yeah. And now you're giving back. So let's talk a little bit about that. Like, we talked behind the scenes, and I've listened to some of your other interviews. You went through the 10 years and obviously the mental health issues, or just the challenges. Music was a great outlet. You kind of went back through those challenges as you started in the music career, but now you're a little more established, man, and you're giving back. Talk about some of the things that you've been able to do for first responders now that you're, as I like to say, I'm predicting you're going to be a superstar in country. Like, I think Beyonce is going to know who you are at some point in country music, brother. That's my prediction. So, but you got to talk about that now. You're doing some wonderful things for us.
Yeah. I had attended this one leadership seminar in Washington, D.C. with my manager and a publicist. And like any seminar, there's certain things you can attend. And I went to the mental health one, because it's something I've always been really just kind of dedicated to. Before I decided that law enforcement or first responders were going to be our target audience or community. But I went, and like most mental health clinics, it was the least attended. And then, of course, you just all these, you know, different issues come up. Statistics are a huge thing that kind of come up, but no one's really having a genuine conversation on how to affect the positive impact or how to affect some change. And so we started talking about it. Law enforcement came up. First responders came up. I keep saying law enforcement, because just that's where I go. But first responders came up as hey, what can they do better to deal with the mental illness community and all that stuff? Not to mistake the two as mental health in general, but the mental illness community came up. I was like, y'all don't realize how much these men and women are already doing. You know what I mean? And now you're going to try to tack on therapists on top of all that and try to see maybe it's law enforcement's problem. You know, this individual's a problem in our society, so don't worry, the cops will deal with it or something like that. And I was just like, that takes a mental toll on the police officer, you know? And so that's when that conversation came up with me and my manager. We went to dinner that night, and I said, we really ought to ring that bell. You know, because that it was something about that conversation, for lack of better terms, it kind of pissed me off. You know what I mean? This is not an easy topic of conversation already. And then just kind of dump it on first responders as though we're the only ones that can fix it. I said, no, we got to come together as a community. And that just kind of widened the whole lens about how we need to talk about the mental health of the first responder community. And that's a whole issue in and of itself. And so I started an organization called Fray that really, you know, our main objective is to raise awareness that this is a problem that exists. And I think with my platform and my ability to garner some national attention, to get on TV shows and stuff like that, and not just showcase my music, but showcase what we're doing for the first responder community, is the best way that we can do that, is raise awareness that mental health is a topic of conversation that's got a huge negative stigma attached to it when it comes to the first responder community. Suicide is up, you know. First responders are 85% more likely to take their own life than to die in the line of duty, which is just an obscene statistic. And I was just like, man, why is this happening? And so we just decided to ring that bell and think we're trying to help circumvent some of those problems, and started meeting with members of Congress over in Washington, D.C., and just trying to. Senator Ben Ray Lujan from New Mexico has been really instrumental in that effort. Congresswoman Napolitano, both New Mexico representatives, and that's the state where I'm from. So they've been really helpful. but they've got this mental health consortium already set up. And so they're like, hey, why don't we try to put this into some legislation and see what we can do to get some funding to not only raise awareness for your campaign, but also, you know, put in some federal and state funding in providing what we're essentially calling decompression rooms. And what that is if there's space in a firehouse or a police department that lends itself to, you know, us building it out, we would be put in a massage chairs and track lighting and just try to create this really cool, serene ambient room where you can go in there and just decompress for 5-10 minutes or whatever you got. You take your lunch hour just to go and, you know, get a massage and get your head right and then go back out there and take care of business. And so, but of course that costs money. And, you know, we got, you know, legislation in place right now that's hopefully going to help us out with that. But that's just a long-winded way of saying that we're trying to give back, man.
Yeah. But the cool part is you mentioned a couple things there. I mean, you experienced this. Yep. And I love the fact that you got a little pissed off when someone said, yeah, well, it's mental health now. We call police for mental health issues on the street. Yeah. And then that also, though, stems into our own mental health as police and fire, right? Like, so we're dealing with people who have mental health issues, and we have mental health issues on top of that. So, and I think a lot of people just kind of brush it under the rug that first responders deal with that. And if I don't see it, and if it's not in my face, then it's not really happening until it does, right? Like you said, there's so many first responders that are having mental health issues, aren't dealing with it in a positive nature. Suicide is up. Obviously, alcoholism, drug abuse, how many relationship issues. You know, you talked about how your wife was a little bit strained because of those things. And I think that's common with all first responders. So bringing awareness to the general population. When you look back on your 10 years and your years in law enforcement, are there some things now you're kind of saying, oh, that's why I was this way, or that's why this happened to me? Are you able to kind of reflect and then project that and educate because of that?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely have my own stories with, you know, bouts of suicidal ideations and just going into this really dark place. And you're always afraid to speak up about that because you're afraid of being labeled unfit for duty, right? Or just, or being let go. And now you're losing your livelihood because of it. So that's just one of many issues. Now, it wasn't something that's all time, you know, it's just, it's every now and then I could feel it creeping up, you know, stints with anxiety or depression and just the constant roller coaster that you're on emotionally in that occupation, whether you're running into a burning building or if you're being shot at, or you're trying to do compressions on someone and trying to keep their pulse going until you can get them to the hospital as an EMT or paramedic. I mean, there are just so many different traumas that you absorb and you never realize how much they have an impact on you until you start going to that dark place. And again, fortunately, I was a sound mind enough to be able to reach out and talk to people and, you know, talk to the therapist with city council that provides and all that stuff. But it's just, you got to dig a lot deeper than that. And I think there's no better place to start than with peer support, which was hard enough to do already. You had maybe a handful. I mean, everyone's your friends with the camaraderie and stuff that you've got, but at the end of the day, you want to be able to reach out to your friend without them looking at you like you're some sort of weak individual. And that's a big stigma that we struggle with as first responders. We are notorious for compartmentalizing our own issues for the sake of looking weak. And that's just one of the many things that we need to change that within our community. We need to be able to take care of each other. We are a family and we need to act like it.
Yeah. I think that's where the brotherhood and sisterhood really needs to step up. And I even think we need to redefine what that brotherhood and sisterhood is, because we're sometimes really good at piling on top because it's funny or we're jovial or joking, but we also need to be able to step back and evaluate. And I think that's kind of what you're elaborating on too. I mean, with us in the fire service and police one and EMS one, our big focuses here and at the end of March is mental health. And I did a counseling session live with our podcast just to try to get people to understand how beneficial it can be. And really, I think, you know, the other side of that, and I think you would agree, is we kind of picture you're going to sit in this chair and you're just going to, you know, unload all these deep, dark secrets. And it doesn't go like that, right? Like, so all these different stigmas that we can bust, I think, you know, will help not only educate the general population, but our own selves.
It's definitely a really hardened layer that you have to, it takes a lot of chipping away. And that's what it is. I, you know, sometimes when I go and visit these you know, police departments or firehouses, some people are a lot more receptive than others, but it's very, very small amount because we're still really afraid of it. Even when you mention the phrase mental health, it's almost like a giant eye roll. And some people just kind of check out, like, I don't need to be here. You know, like, I'm fine, this and that. But eventually, all right, let's say you're not even there for yourself. You should pay attention because it might affect the person you're sitting next to, you know, and it's, that's just as important. So I think, you know, I think we just need to get better about that. But it's definitely, you definitely have to chip away. And I think a big way to be able to do that is talk about personal experiences, which is why I'm so open about saying, like, yeah, man, I dealt with this and I dealt with this and I dealt with this, because I saw a lot of shit, man. And let's say it wasn't even trying to, even if I wasn't in a place where I wanted to try to affect harm on myself, I was thinking about affecting harm on another individual, right? Especially suspects, you know what I mean? You know, crimes against children, stuff like that, where you start going like, man, I could flip a switch right now. And that's just not a good place to be as a first responder. We have to hold ourselves to a higher standard, and we're out there to make the calls that we make without being the same as the bad guy. Telling those stories gets people to open up a little bit more.
And that's the social side of that is, I think, is really positive for us too. You know, right? Like I just thought, like, hey, if somebody's listening to this, grab your crew and go watch a Frank Ray concert, and bond with your crew and talk to them and ask the difficult question, how you doing, man? And going back to you and your personal thing, like, did you have somebody that reached out to you in some of those times, or did you go to do some counseling? Kind of, what are some other things that you know that you did, and then what are some things that you didn't do that you wish you would have?
Counseling for sure was a big help. Just open communication with my wife. Again, back to spousal support. If you can't open up to them, you won't open up to anybody. You know what I mean? But yeah. You have to be able to open up to them, because sometimes they might just take them to be like, text a friend like, hey, you know, Frank's not doing well, you know, come over, can you come over and check on him or something like that. It can even go that far, but just they have to know what's going on. It's good, you know, whether or not you're a time bomb or something, you know what I mean, like that. Yeah. That needs to happen. So open communication with your spouse. But I was very, very fortunate. I mean, I had a bunch of friends. Frankie Duran was one of them. He was a firefighter. He's somebody that I was really, really close to. Shane Briscoe was my lieutenant. And you know, one of my best friends to this date, and he was always there for me, and he was never afraid to just, you know, if I needed to have a cry, you know, he'd let me have a cry. You know, if I needed to have a drink, you know, we'd have a drink and make sure we didn't go too far on the other end. Yeah. You know, that's obviously socialization and consumption of alcohol and stuff. That's all fine and dandy, but some people, because you know, you're dealing with these traumas, it goes off the rails really, really quickly. So alcohol abuse, substance abuse. I've had a lot of buddies lose their jobs because of it, right? Because they show up to duty and you're like, there's something going on with this guy. And it's just like, you know, and then you lose your job and they, you know, you don't realize the lives that are being impacted when something like that happens, just losing your job. I mean, now your family was dependent on you, and you know what I mean? And all because you couldn't say like, I had a shitty day and I just need to cry, or I need to go hit something. I got a punching bag for that reason out in the shop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got to do that, or go work out, or go hunt and go fish and find your happy place. Find that thing that makes you happy, and talk to your friends, man. Like we're so far past the old mindset of just suppress it and deal with it, and you know, brush it off and go to the next call. You just can't do that. You know what I mean? I'm not saying you can't take care of business. You still have to handle business, right? And you got to be command. You got to have some command presence. You got to be assertive and all that stuff. But
right.
When all that's done and the day's done, take your vest off. You don't just leave that shit at the door. You can't. You got to take it with you inside the house. And that's where you got to be able to say, this is what happened today. This is how I'm feeling. And express yourself, or else it's going to manifest into something negative.
Yeah. Well, and I just want to comment really quickly on when you were talking about, you know, the thoughts that you were having. Thinking like, oh, I just want to nail that person or whatever, like all these thoughts that are going through your mind. It seems like it would be impossible to go through everything the first responders go through and not every once in a while wonder, is this normal? And I'm going to air quotes normal there, of course. But that is really what can be so powerful about just sharing those personal stories and talking to a therapist, because you might wonder it, but these are people who can help you answer that question, say, yeah, that's normal. You're okay. And at what point does it actually kind of drift into unhealthy behavior? And, you know, a therapist can be so helpful. And, you know, Aaron mentioned it earlier, but at the end of March is our First Responder Wellness Week. And one of the days of that week is focused on mental health. And Aaron is going to be speaking with Dr. Rochelle Zemlock. And this live podcast is called Firefighter Therapy, Busting Myths and Stopping Stigma. So it's like exactly what we're talking about here. It's about busting those, you know, those myths, stopping the stigma, because yeah, you got to be able to just have those simple conversations with each other.
Yeah. And I'm sure, I mean, a lot of what I've experienced were normal human emotions, right? But you start thinking about when you're in the capacity of a law enforcement officer or a fire investigator or anybody that's just carrying on duty, right? And you come across a heinous crime like that and you have these thoughts, how quickly go from a thought to an action, right? And fortunately, that's never happened. At least, you know, I can say that for me personally. But, you know, I've known a few guys that, holy crap, man, if they get pissed off enough, you know, they're putting a guy in the back of the squad car, might just give him a little elbow to the back of the head or something like that. You know what I mean? But yeah, like that kind of stuff happens because you're so consumed by this anger and stuff. And that even that's just not right. Of course, this was years and years and years ago. You might have been able to get away with it. But now It's ridiculous, man. Like how easy it is to do something to really go off the rails like that. And you just got to stop it.
Yeah, I think it affects service a lot more than we want to admit. You know, whether it's, you know, third time, like yesterday I worked and it's the second time we've had a drug overdose on the same person in the same bathroom. And, you know, you're not as friendly the second time. You know, and I, police officers, fire, same thing, like, right. Like, and sometimes if it's that eighth call in a row, you know, it does affect our service too. And so that's another reason to just be aware of it and have tools to really help try to reset you. And you talked about the rooms in firehouses or in police stations where you could just decompress a little bit, take some deep breaths, get a little massage, just get yourself a little, you know, clearance between what you see every day and just get in touch with your mind. And that leads me to a question. Is there any time you've been performing where you just started to, like, man, the emotions just are getting me, and you thought, you know, this is stuff that's coming out that I'm dealing with here on stage at this moment? Have you ever been overcome that way?
No. And primarily because that is my therapy, right? Music is my therapy. Performing is my life. And it's amazing how much of those experiences I was actually able to kind of shed off, you know, after being out of the game now for 6 years. You know, not everyone has that luxury. I get it. You know what I mean? Not everyone just quit and go do country music for a living. But I was able to take a lot of that weight off my shoulders, which is why I'm so grateful to what you men and women do every day to this day. Just when you put on the uniform and you go out and you provide a public service and you're putting your life on the line and you're absorbing all these traumas, you know, from people, these calls for service, it's not an easy gig. And so I will always be grateful and thankful to first responders for that. If anything does creep up, it's usually like in meetings, you know, where you're just trying to figure out. That's pretty much it. But I mean, who likes a freaking meeting anyway? Nobody does.
Either. Right. How about you? You visited like 50 departments, police and fire departments, when you were on tour. Was it last year with Old Dominion? Right. Like, are there times where you felt like, hey, I'm actually making a difference here?
Yeah. There was a couple different instances. I will say this: in every single one of them, I've gotten a message from somebody. A police officer or a firefighter that was there, they'll find me on social media and they'll instant message me, which is great. They'll just DM me. Maybe they didn't feel comfortable speaking up there in front of everybody in the room, but then, you know, the minute I leave, they're just like, hey, thanks for stopping by. Like, I've been dealing with this, and that's when you realize, all right, if you can reach one person, great. There was another officer in Washington, and I won't say exactly where, but because she didn't really feel comfortable, but it was a female officer who 3 days after I left was involved in her first OIS. And so her first officer involved shooting, it was really difficult for her. And she messaged me and said, hey, I just want to let you know, because of your visit, I didn't hesitate for 1 second opening up and allowing myself to feel these emotions and be sad and be angry and be, you know, hopeful and just, grateful for being able to, you know, have stayed alive through that interaction, just all these different things. And you know, it just, you know, that you're having some sort of impact if you can reach one person, you know, and then other people will tell you their stories too, man. It was the guy I was getting an IV, you know, I can't remember what festival I was at, but fire crew came in, you know, they were there, and they gave me a bag, and I was telling him about Frey, and he was just like, man, just last year I had a plan, I was gonna kill myself, and you know, and for whatever reason, the next call for service that he went to, you know, something just steered him in the opposite direction, which is really great that that happened. But he said nobody knew, like my wife didn't know, my people that I was on that call with didn't know, but I had a plan, and you know, for whatever reason, you know, call it God, call it whatever you want to call it, he just did not, he wound up not doing it. But he was so open in sharing that with me that he's made it a point too to talk about. He kind of became the sort of peer support leader in that department. And so it's just, it takes those experiences sometimes, and it takes that one individual to be like, hey man, this shit happened with me, and I know you're full of shit if you say you're not dealing with anything, because I did the same job and I'm dealing with it. So you must be going through something. It might not be as drastic as, you know, having these ideations or whatever, but you know, it's going to eat at you a little by little, you know, and we need to talk about it.
It compounds, man. It really does. It can compound, especially over a career, one bad call, another bad call on top of that, you know, just, you know, and I think that's your biggest message. Find some positive ways, use your EAP, use some counseling, talk to your spouse, build a good crew around you, build your band around you, right? Build your band, find an outlet, all just unbelievably positive things that I'm hoping our listeners are taking note of and saying, you know what, I'm gonna go listen to a little Frank Ray, and on the way to the counseling session, whatever it might be, I'm just gonna go talk to my significant other. But any small thing I think can really add up over time. Just, you know, we can take this the opposite way. Our calls can compound, but so can a conversation, right? Yes. Yeah, a tune that makes you shed a tear a little bit. That's okay, man. That's great.
It's all good, man. It's all good. Yeah, the main thing is just speak up. And the more you speak up, the easier it gets. You know what I mean? The easier it gets to have these conversations where you could say something like suicidal ideations, and not everyone's going to be like, oh my God, what should we call? Do we need to call somebody? It's not, you know what I mean? It's just like, no, take it easy. Like that kind of thing, like that stigma that's attached to that phrase in and of itself, right? Or depression is another stigma that we just think, all right, this guy is off his rocker. Like there's just no way that he can do this job anymore. Like, that's just not fair to that individual, right?
Yeah.
But the more you speak up about it, then the more, like the easier it gets. And that's really all it is. Just speaking up, man, because you do that enough, like you said, you can compound the positivity. And that's the best perspective I've heard.
Yeah, building that resilience, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the people around us, I think, see it a lot of times. And it's real difficult to say something if you're not willing to admit it, right? Because we take it out on our significant others. We take it out on our friends, our co-hosts, if it's a podcast. Or our band members, right?
They got their fair share of Frank Ray scoldings.
Yeah. So the other part of this is if somebody's coming up to you and cares that much to say something to you, before you respond, take a deep breath and understand where that's coming from. Because we're really, as first responders, I know, and I'm just talking from my own experience, man. I'm like you, I'm fine, man. I'm fine. You know, you worry about your own self. If I were to take a breath, step back and go, I'm not fine. And they're obviously identifying this. And this is a wonderful individual to say that, mm-hmm. You know, that's another thing I think, you know, as we had touched on, I think before we got on the podcast, just talking about relationships and being there and building that brotherhood and that sisterhood of whether it's fire, whether it's police. And so thank you so much for stepping up, saying these things, helping us from a standpoint of making the public aware and, you know, kind of throwing it back at us a little bit to be like, hey, it's all right, man. I understand this cause I went through it. So with that though, I got a couple more questions though. I want to talk about, let's relate this now to your new career. Are there times where your background as a police officer, and you did these hard things as an officer, and now you're in this Nashville thing, and maybe somebody said, ah, this guy isn't good, or I don't like your music, or, you know, you can't hit that note or whatever. In the back of your mind, you're like, you know what, man, I've saved people's lives. Go screw yourself. Like, I'm going to do this. Like, has it helped you?
Yeah.
Is that resilience transferred to the country, the music career?
Oh, 100%, without a doubt. I mean, and I, you know, even talking about wanting to admit stuff to ourselves, you know, like I said, we're a very tight-knit community here in Nashville, and everybody wants to see each other win, right? But it's not without that competitive edge, right? And so there may be some people out there that just don't want to see you succeed and will say things behind your back or whatever. But again, I was just like, listen, man, I've been called everything under the sun. There's nothing you're going to say. If you say I don't dress well or I don't look good, right? Or I'm 5'6". And so I get that a lot. Like, hey, you're a lot shorter than I thought you'd be. I was just saying, like, little tiny things, superficial things just roll off your shoulder, man. I was like, I've been in knocked out, drag out fights. Like, you know, I've gone to just countless foot pursuits, vehicle pursuits, you know, shot at, the whole nine, man. It's just like, there's nothing you can say that's going to hurt my feelings. You know what I mean? My mother's been called worse things than what you just called me. From, you know, it's just crazy. I've developed this really thick skin because of it. Critics are not trying to fight me, you know, in some back alley or anything like that. So they can write whatever. That resilience, it does transfer. But I'm grateful for the 10 years of experience that I was able to do the job for, because not only because of, you know, what it's done for my personal life, but because of the family that I became a part of. You know, that's what it is. And that's why I want to stay so close to it and want to do everything I can to help. And, you know, hopefully this is, you know, just one of the many ways we can do that.
Well, our audience is, you know, primarily fire EMS, but we're going to adopt you as our own, man. Even though you were police, you got a Denver Fire shirt on.
Good, man. Look, check it out.
There it is.
Oh, there you go.
See? And so we're going to embrace you as our own, because I think, you know, obviously the issues are the same, you know, from the standpoint of we all see stuff and we need to stick together. And it's so wonderful to have you on this program. Have you ever had to jump off stage, break up a fight, or do any cop, like any holds during any of your
concerts?
That's
where I thought you were going with your previous question, Aaron. I thought you were totally going to ask him if he's like his cop mind goes into effect.
There actually is a really good story. The first one I'll tell you was in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and the guys and I were playing. I don't know. Somebody yelled to play Neon Moon, and I was like, "All right, I'm gonna do Neon Moon." So we start playing Neon Moon, and this fight breaks out in the middle of Neon Moon. So I will never look at Neon Moon the same way, right? Because these guys are literally on stage and just cracking beer bottles and stuff. But maybe the old me would have jumped in, but the other part of me was just like, "They're just two drunk guys just getting after it," you know. I might just let them finish it off, and the bouncers and everyone are going to come anyway. So we just kept on playing. I spend most every night. I mean, there's literally microphones are just kind of doing all this stuff, and I'm just like, neon light, you know. beneath the light of a neon moon. And it was just a whole thing. So I just thought that was funny that I actually let a fight happen, and I didn't do it. But there was another instance in a country music festival in Austin. And we all knew George Strait was going to be there. He was going to come down to Sallyport and right up to the stage. A fan, I guess, must have heard that was going to happen, a crazed fan. And you can see this kind of commotion going off in the distance and, you know, it's kind of dodging security. And I see it's clear that they're trying to stop this individual and it's not working. And so I had a beer in my hand and I just set it down and I waited for him to get close enough. And then I just went in there and I tackled the hell out of him. And and just held them until security could get there. So security got there, and I just brushed myself off and picked up my beer. And then George Strait came strolling on through, and I was like, "You'd never know, buddy, but I think I just saved your life." Anyway, well, so I saved George Strait's life, and he doesn't even know it.
Well, if he's listening to this, because I, you know, we have quite a few followers now. If he's listening to this, what's a way that people can follow you, by the way, or reach out? Like you talked about your socials, you got a website, like what are the best ways to become a fan?
Well, my phone number is, I'm just going to, Frank Ray Music on social media, all social media platforms like TikTok, Instagram, just Frank Ray Music. They should all be verified as well. So they have the little blue check mark. And I say that because there's a lot of spam that comes through and, you know, fake profiles and stuff. People pretended to be me. So I'm pretty active. My favorite platform, I think, is Instagram, just because I like the usability a little bit more. So if you want to get a hold of me, I'm pretty active on there. I'll respond, you know, mm-hmm. say what's up. And, you know, if you need someone to talk to you or whatever, I'm no stranger to that either. You know, people are usually kind of taken aback by that, but yeah, totally, man. I'm just like you. We were talking about it off screen. I mean, I put my pants on like anybody else. Yep. And so, yeah, certainly nothing crazy special about me. If you're having a bad day, you need someone to vent to, and you just want to talk to me, I'm here. Holler at me. Let's
go. Or you need to listen to some damn good music. Come see you in concert. Like I'm going to do, I think it's August 8th in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. I'll be there.
Be fun.
Yeah. I'm not going to mess with you though, because I'm afraid you'll tackle me. So I'll try to be on my best behavior at first. You know?
Nah, man. I think you can take me any day. Look at this. Look at this guy. He's got the coat. He's covering up the guns and stuff.
I'm too old, man. I'd rather just have a whiskey and tell stories with you instead, man. That's what we're going to do for sure.
But also with the Fray organization, if they want to find out more, just it's frayoc.org. It's frayoc.org. You know, if you want to figure out how you can help out with the campaign, there's a, you know, way you can donate. But really that website is just geared to kind of point you in the right direction of organizations that do it right. Reputable organizations, if you're dealing with alcohol abuse or substance abuse or suicidal ideations, or just, you know, you got emergencies and all that stuff, you know, like, you know, 988 Lifeline is a great resource as well. So you can visit the Fray organization and see little efforts that we're making there, but definitely hit me up on social media. I'm pretty active on there. I figured out why the phrase "an act of Congress" exists. You know what I mean? When we started trying to build up all this legislation and stuff with them. But hopefully we can make some strides in the right direction this year with that legislation and getting it passed. And maybe if your firehouse, your department or anything, your organization needs these decompression rooms, hopefully we can get Congress to move their ass a little bit and we'll come hook you up.
Yep. And any conversation can lead to a whole nother project, right? Or some other idea.
Yeah, this is just the bare minimum. Because of the world that I'm in with country music, and I got all these, you know, these huge country music superstar friends, I definitely want to see Fray kind of build up to this whole thing where we do yearly retreats, you know what I mean, for first responders, and invite people, you know, invite firefighters, invite corrections, you know, PD, EMS, everybody come out, man. We'll find a cool place to just have a, you know, just a throwdown, man. It'd be a lot of fun. So hopefully the Fray organization can bring something like that, which is just this annual retreat. You can go and decompress. We can talk about our feelings and then do some cool shit on top of that.
Yeah. And then I think at that point, like Beyonce will play a little acoustic, Eric Church, and then you will come on as a headliner, a little backyard concert. I'm throwing that out there, you know, right now.
I'm all about manifesting dreams, man. I'm okay with that. Eric Church will open for me one day.
That's good. I think, well, you know, he might be listening as well. So Eric, you know, if you're listening, there's some room for you to reach out. We'd love to hear from you as well, you know? So I'm going to throw it out there at least.
And Beyonce as well.
Yes. Yes. Although I don't ever want to say anything negative about Beyonce for the fear of the beehive. They can just come after me, you know?
It's going to be a fun, wild ride. I mean, I hope you get to play with her sometime. You know, how crazy, you know.
Incredible talent. You know, that's a whole conversation that I'm sure is probably going to take place during this week at the Country Radio Seminar because of her introduction into country music. You know, whether it's short-lived or whether it's something she wants to do forever, whatever the case, I think it's awesome that she's really shining a light on other Black female artists that have been trying to do it for a while. And now, because she stoked this conversation, they're starting to get a lot more visibility, and that can only help, you know what I mean? That can only help country music. That can only help our society. Whatever your personal take is on Beyonce and the song itself, that's totally your prerogative, whatever. But I think she's opening doors for girls that I know have been busting their ass for years that are truly country and that they know how to do it right. She's elevating them to another level. So that's good. It's all good.
Yeah. We'll have one more drink because we got a couple more questions. All right. We're going to get a little more deep now. All right. You still got some. Janelle, perfect time. He's primed.
I don't want to end this conversation and run downstairs to have to get some more. So I'm just like sipping it. We're good.
Yeah. We got just like 4 or 5 questions left, man. But you've given us so much. Really appreciate the time again. And just the insight, man. I hope somebody's listening to this, you know, follows you, get some help and just understands they're not alone, you know, and it's so wonderful to talk to people that are supporting us. And I know that there's a lot more out there. And so as you keep climbing up, remember, just keep coming back anytime, man.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
We're moving into the hot seat, rapid fire. Here we go. Who are your favorite musicians and artists who have had the biggest influence?
Well, outside of country music, Selena is one of my biggest influences. I grew up in Texas, and so she was like, a lot of my music, you can hear that kind of cumbia mix in there. The stuff, the songs that I was telling you about to go check out, definitely has a really cool danceable vibe. Freddie Fender was a huge one. Talking about artists to elevate other artists, like he really paved the way for Hispanic artists like myself. But of course, I'm a huge Chris Stapleton fan. I got to meet him a couple months back, and he just made me a bigger fan because he's so awesome and just down to earth. And one of the best voices in the world, I think, not outside of country music, in the world. He's just incredible. And then I also love Bruno Mars. I think that guy is just an entertainer and what I strive to be as a performer. Dan and Shay are some of my buddies. I'm just kind of thinking off the top, and they came to mind because I think I'm going to record a song that Shay was a writer on. And so I was just thinking about Shay. Gosh, there's so many. Beyonce. No. like Toby Keith was one of my right. heroes. Tracy Lawrence is probably at I don't even know, he wasn't at the top of my list, maybe because I was working backwards, but Tracy Lawrence is probably my favorite country music artist. Of course, you know, you got the George Straits, you got Reba, you got Dolly, you got everybody, the whole nine. But yeah, if I had to narrow it down, you know, to two, Tracy Lawrence, Toby Keith were definitely at the top of the list.
That's awesome. All right, so you're playing in Oshkosh. And before you go on stage, they say, hey, Frank, we're going to do something different. We're going to give you a walk-up song, not your own. What song will that be? We call it, you know, your walk-up song. If you played baseball at all, you know, like you come to the plate. You know, if I said you got to choose one, what would it be?
Man, I'm really pissed about that, too, because I would go with Lowrider, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like that. That's kind of a funky feel, too.
It sets the tone for what you're going to see at my show. And then fucking Old Dominion did it the whole tour last year. They came out to Lowrider, and I was so pissed off about it because I was like, now if I do it, I'm going to feel like I'm copying Old Dominion, so I can't do it anymore. So yeah, it would have been Lowrider would have been at the top of the list.
You could do it. You could do that in August because it's a year and they'll probably come out with something different. You know,
I hope so. Well, I'm actually going to Key West with them in a couple of weeks. So I'll see then if they've changed anything in their show or what. But yeah, it definitely would have been Lowrider. If not, I don't know. What would yours be? I'm curious. Cause maybe you have a great idea.
Well, it depends. Like in Wisconsin, you know, like you could play Jump Around. Yeah. That's a big tune for Wisconsin. I actually just saw U2 in concert. So Where the Streets Have No Name, that intro. If you can crank the bass and it's inside and you can get the seats to rumble a little bit and build up, that would be another one. Yeah. You know, if I was going up to the plate, it'd be Mama Said Knock You Out.
All good.
Yeah. It depends. I might throw a little Drake in there, you know. So it just depends on where we're at, but like, I do like the Lowrider. I like cranking that up too.
Here's my second choice, and I don't know that I can do it because I'm not as cool as Kid Rock. But if you haven't heard MGK's and Kid Rock's Bad Motherfucker, you need to hear that song.
Okay.
Sorry about to the audience. Sorry, audience.
That's the name of the song. So you're just quoting the name of the song.
The song, and it is if it does not get your blood pumping, you're dead inside a little bit. All right. So cool. You check out that song. It gets you amped up. But I don't think I could ever do it in a country music festival where there's a bunch of 12-year-olds in the crowd and stuff. You know what I mean? Kid Rock can get away.
Trendsetter, buddy. Trendsetter. Maybe do your own cut of it and throw that out there then, you know?
Maybe. Yeah. Not a bad idea.
All right. Next up is I want to know the biggest influence in your life, not musical, but personal influence growing up.
Oh, wow. Growing up, it's, I got to say my grandfather's, and I say my grandfather's because my grandpa Marcos is my great grandfather. And then my grandpa Robert, but they were so alike. I mean, they might as well have been the same person. You know what I mean? And they passed, you know, those traditions and the way they raise their kids and their grandkids onto my dad. And he's been really, really incredible. But, you know, he wouldn't be the man that he is without them. So, you know, my grandpa Marcos was probably, you know, one of the biggest reasons why I am who I am today. It's, you know, because of the legacy he built in our family. So I think that's a influence. It's definitely my grandpa. Yeah.
All right. Final question. It's a tough one, my friend. How are you working to get better?
You know, I think I've done better. Like when I talk about open communication with my wife, it hasn't been without its own struggles, you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, we're still married, and I'm sure there's days where she just wants to strangle me. She doesn't want to talk to me. And it's, I think it's finding productive ways to actually have conversations and knowing when to pause and take a break if you know it's going to get into an argument or whatever. It's just communication in general, not just about how I'm feeling that day, but just expressing my concerns or expressing gratitude, just being a little more open and treating those people that are around me and letting them know that I care about them, right? Or that I'm angry with them, or, you know, hey, this is something we could do better. Like, you know, words of encouragement, criticism, all the above. I think just communicating, I think I've done a lot better with that. And that's something that I continually need to work on because, you know, especially now in the world that I live in where it's just Frank Ray, Frank Ray, Frank Ray, right? And I'm the product per se. And you can spread yourself pretty thin and you can get people coming in from all different angles and it can get really overwhelming sometimes. And so being able to voice those concerns, I don't think there's anything more powerful than what you got here, you know, what you got rolling out up here, but being able to express it out here, that's key in anything you do in life. You got to speak up.
Yeah. So well said, man. I appreciate that. Does that transfer then to your band? Cause we didn't make a simulation between your crew and your band, but I think there's a lot there. I mean, is that also transferring now to your band and when you're writing and performing?
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. I mean, especially when you spend that much time together, you know, you can get on each other's nerves and stuff. So you have to find productive ways to be able to communicate that too, but not just critiquing each other, or hashing out little squabbles and, you know, also being able to pat each other on the back when, you know, we do something good. You know, we're human beings like anybody else, just because we're holding an instrument doesn't really mean anything, right? Same thing for if you're wearing a uniform, people forget that it's not always sunshine and rainbows and you got to find good ways to kind of get around that, but also take pride in the good moments and being able to give those just as much acknowledgement, if not more, than the negative ones.
Thanks so much for everything, man. You talked about gratitude. You talked about communication. You talked about, you know, taking a pause to just think about responses and think about how you're feeling. You know, we touched on mental health for first responders, ways to improve your mental health, see a counselor, talk to each other, be a good brother, be a good sister, be a good friend. Can't thank you enough for all your insight. To our listening audience, we will leave the links to your music. We'll leave a link to your organization. If you are actually just listening to this on the podcast, everyone, please go over to our YouTube page and watch. And you can see how genuine Frank Ray is and his passion to help us here in the first responder community. And just a great guy. And I'm a fan. If you are watching, by the way, please rate, review the show, share this with your friends, your crew, your family. And most importantly, just take what Frank was saying, man. It's not easy for anybody. We all have the same challenges. Make sure that you learn something, do something, and share something to make you and those around you better every shift. Thanks for listening, everybody.